Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests. And well, today, my special guest for this hour is Dr. Michael Kaufman. Of course, he has his degrees in certain types of, climatology, Michael?
Yeah, I have a degree in meteorology as well as forestry and ecosystems analysis.
All right, fine. Well, of course, recently he's putting together a DVD on global warming because, of course, this is being utilized by the Al Gores of this world and by the people who are certainly control the media and control the wealth of our nation. It is being used as a justification to create a wretching transformation of society. That's Al Gore's term up in his book, Earth and the Balance. A wretching transformation of society. And, of course, what they really want to do is force the United States to give up its use of fossil fuel energy, electricity, cars, and destroy the infrastructure of our society so they can lower the living standards of our people. And people say that's crazy talk. Nobody would want to do that. Well, of course, everything going on today is crazy talk because we have people who have a different world view. And until you understand there really are people who march to a different drumbeat, who dream a different dream because they worship a different god, it's impossible to fathom what's really going on today. So with that as a background, Michael, why don't you tell us about global warming? Should we be concerned? Is the global warming, is the level of CO2 increasing? And what's the relationship between man's activity and the rising, the skyrocketing levels of CO2 in the atmosphere?
You know, it's a very interesting thing, Stan. We do have global warming. There is no doubt about that. And as a consequence, we need to be aware of what's happening. But at the same time, and the levels of carbon dioxide are going up, too. I've got some background noise here I'm trying to get resolved. And I'm not sure. Yeah, okay. The increase in greenhouse gases, supposedly, because carbon dioxide is a greenhouse gas, has caused all the recent warming. However, the overwhelming evidence, and I want to make this very clear, the overwhelming evidence, regardless of what you hear on the evening news or the headlines in your newspaper, is that it's a part of a natural cycle and not man-caused. Now, does man contribute to this? We may. Who knows? However, it's well within the norms and normal climate variability, and the evidence is that we're recovering from a little ice age back in the 1700s and 1800s. What we're experiencing right now is to be expected from that little recovery, and it portends good things, not bad things.
Well, I think it's so important for people to understand that, Dr. Kaufman says, you know, we've already been, Earth has been gradually warming, but already for several hundred years. And, of course, most of that warming in the 20th century took place before 1940. In fact, since 1940, when we begin putting out so much in the way of fossil fuel, the increase in temperatures leveled off, or some people even think it may be dropping a little bit, but certainly the measurements, which you can measure the temperatures averaged throughout across the Earth and in the stratosphere and under the ocean, are those levels really going up in this last, say, 20 or 30 years, as Al Gore says?
No, no, and I think we need to recognize that while temperatures have gone up, and I think you made a very good point a moment ago, is that during the period of 1945 to 1975, when we were having some of the most rapid increases in carbon dioxide.
Hold that thought, Michael, please. Okay, well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest is Dr. Michael Kaufman, and we're talking about global warming. Dr. Kaufman's putting together a DVD, and he was simply saying that there is global warming, but it's been around for hundreds of years because we'd had a period of global cooling, and then we reversed and we began a period of global warming several hundred years ago. The carbon dioxide has increased, you know, certainly over the last 50 years or so, but it's increased from about 280 parts per million to about 340 parts per million of the atmosphere. What we're really talking is an increase of 0.028 to 0.034 parts percentage of the atmosphere. So that's pretty hard to imagine how that infinitesimal amount of CO2, when compared with the entire atmosphere, could produce the catastrophic changes that Al Gore is talking about. So you pick up the story, please.
Absolutely. And one of the things that is never mentioned by Al Gore or any global warming proponent is that carbon dioxide is a relatively minor greenhouse gas. Now, it is important, don't get me wrong, but the overwhelming greenhouse gas that is in the atmosphere is water vapor, something that's around you all the time unless you happen to live in the Sierra Desert or in the Mojave Desert or someplace that's extremely dry. But the fact is that just water vapor by itself will account for as much as 35 to 36% of all the greenhouse gases that there are. Now, that's the minimum, absolute minimum. At the maximum, it's somewhere around 66% because it is variable. However, if you throw clouds in there, which is another form of water, it's in the form of water droplets rather than vapor, then it jumps up to 85%. And at the same time, at the most, carbon dioxide, or at the minimum, carbon dioxide is about 7 or 8%. At the most, it's 27% of all the greenhouse gases. It's just not a significant factor. And remember, as Stan just said, that carbon dioxide, most of it is naturally produced. We exhale carbon dioxide, burning causes the release of carbon dioxide and so forth. And the vast majority, 97% plus, of all carbon dioxide, actually it's 98% plus, is actually produced naturally. Humans produce less than 2%. So now if you take the fact that at most, at the very, very outside...
Hold that thought for just a moment here, that bigger stations on board. All right, go right ahead.
At the very outside, what we see is that 27% of the greenhouse gases is carbon dioxide, but only 2% or less than 2% of that is actually man-caused. You're down into the 0.0% range, and it's very difficult to see how that amount of carbon dioxide is going to drive this whole system, cause the Earth to warm up to the burnout point like they're talking about, which is in itself a misdemeanor. What we're seeing here is that the Earth, even in 1200 AD, that's 800 years ago, was a degree and a half warmer than it is right now. It's called the medieval optimal or the climate optimum, whatever you want to call it, that's what it was called. In 1700, we had, as I mentioned before, the Little Ice Age, which was a degree to a degree and a half colder than it is right now. And what we're recovering from, of course, as I indicated, was the recovery from the Little Ice Age. But the fact is, we're not even at the point where we were at 1200 A.D. In 1200 A.D., the Vikings were colonizing Greenland. They were actually growing crops now where there's nothing but ice. In 1700 A.D., we had the Thames River in London freezing over every winter, and they had ice parties and so forth on the Thames River because it was so cold. Also, at the same time, there were massive disease outbreaks. There was famine. Crops failed and so forth in the 1700s and 1800s. I mean, these records are abundant. It's nobody's guess at this. This has actually happened. And it was a bad period. At the same time, in 1200 AD, when we had the climate optimum, not only Greenland was being colonized, but Europe was prospering. Things were happening. Cathedrals were being built. Everything was I can't say hunky-dory because that's not true, but at the same time, things were much, much better in 1200 AD climatologically than they were in 1700 AD, and we're heading back towards the conditions that were in 1200 AD. Now, you can go back 5,000 to 6,000 years, and you'll find that the temperature was about 4 to 6 degrees warmer than it is right now. In fact, after the recovery from the last ice age about 11,000 years ago, a little less than 11,000 years ago, it was much warmer than it is now. And what we're seeing, if you could imagine, a wavy line through that 11,000-year period is gradually declining. And in the 11,000 years ago, it was many degrees warmer than it is right now, and gradually it's warming. It gets colder, gets warmer, gets colder, gets warmer, and we're now many, many degrees colder than we were in 11,000 years ago. So the Earth ecosystems, and I'm an ecosystems biologist. I've got my PhD in this. The Earth ecosystems have already gone through several of these periods where it was radically warmer than it is right now. They managed to survive. The polar bears managed to survive and so forth, and we're going to survive again this one.
And, of course, the thing is there are more polar bears than there have been in many, many years. But yes, they keep talking about those poor polar bears, and how many of our listeners have seen the picture of this forlorn polar bear on a little tiny ice floe, and he's sort of staring at you with those big, pleading eyes, and you know that ice floe is going to melt, he's going to fall into the water, and he's going to drown because there's nothing else around him. But the truth of the matter is, a polar bear can swim for 100 miles, you know. He's not going to drown in the water. He's an aquatic creature, you know, and he can swim and swim and swim off to get a seal someplace. So if you look at the real statistics, the polar bear is not in danger. Now, the environmentalists would like to convince you it is. They would like to convince you that the Antarctic is melting and that all the glaciers are receding. And some glaciers are receding, but some glaciers are advancing. Isn't it amazing? They never show you the glaciers that are advancing. So you pick up the story there. And what about this nose of Kilimanjaro? That's another favorite item that they talk about.
It is. And I just want to reaffirm there's about 15 or 16 different major populations of polar bears. All but one are increasing right now or have been increasing. In fact, they're 10 times more than they were 20, 30 years ago. So they're not hurting at all, and they know how to adapt to this, as you just said. As far as the glaciers themselves are concerned, be aware. In fact, if you go back in your memory 10 or 12 years ago, every single night we saw news about a glacier that was advancing in the Alaskan area that was cutting off. It had actually cut off a pod of whales that were trapped in the lagoon behind the advancing glacier. As you just said, Stan, about 40 to 50% of the time you have advancing glaciers, and about 48 to 50%, and then 48 to 50% of the time you have retreating glaciers. They advance and they retreat. There's a tendency, and I will say this, there is a tendency for the glaciers to be retreating. Why? Because we're getting warmer, but it's not man-caused warming. And the ice shelves of Antarctica are sloughing off. Why? Because it's getting warmer. The ocean is actually getting warmer. But there is loads of evidence to suggest or to indicate that the actual currents of the ocean take about 800 years to 1,000 years to express. So what we're seeing in the oceans probably occurred during the medieval optimum that we talked about in 1200 A.D. That's probably set it off. That warmed up the temperatures. They went under the surface, they circulated around the south of Africa and so forth, and now they're starting to reappear around Antarctica and starting to cause problems around Antarctica as well as Greenland and so forth. Another thing that we need to recognize, Greenland, while you hear constantly the Greenland ice sheet is shrinking, yeah, it is around the edges, but not in the middle. In the middle, it's actually increasing. In fact, if you go to the website, and I encourage you to do this, just go to Google or one of your search engines and type in the Lost Squadron, the Lost Squadron, and you'll come up with a dozen or more different articles on the Lost Squadron. What's the Lost Squadron? It was a group of, I think, four or five fighters and two bombers that were flying from the United States over to England during World War II. I think it was 1942, if I remember correctly. And they took off from Greenland after refueling and were heading towards Iceland, and Iceland was totally fogged over. They couldn't land, so they had to go back to Greenland. By that time, Greenland the coastal areas of Greenland were also fogged in, and they were forced to land on a glacier in the center of Iceland, or in Greenland. And they left their planes there. One crashed. The pilot got out. No, there was no death in this. And the others belly skidded in, and they just left the planes there. There was nothing they could do about getting them out. A rescue effort or a search effort was launched in the early 1980s. I think it was in 1981 or thereabouts, they began to realize that they weren't anywhere close to the surface. And several years later, it took them quite a few years to find them, they actually found them, and they were 269 feet below the surface of the ice. Now, they didn't sink there because it was melting. They were there because that much ice was added on top. These ice fields are growing. They're not shrinking. The ice fields of Antarctica are growing. They're not shrinking. In fact, there's strong evidence, very strong evidence, that Antarctica right now is cooling at a rate of about one-tenth of a degree every 10 years. So everything that the global warming theory says should be happening at the poles is not happening. It's just the reverse.
What, of course, now the...
Kilimanjaro. You mentioned Kilimanjaro. Let's talk about Kilimanjaro.
Right. Go ahead.
Kilimanjaro has had vanishing ice sheets on its... They're not really glaciers. They're the thinner than glaciers need to be called glaciers. But their snow fields have been declining over the last 20 years. And you'll hear Al Gore, in fact, in his movie, Inconvenient Truth, he'll talk about Kilimanjaro and show you how radically those ice fields have declined over the last 20 years. Well, folks, it's not because of global warming. There isn't any scientist that will say it's because it's global warming. All the evidence points to the fact that all the forests surrounding it have been cut, and that has changed the climate radically. If you take all the trees away that are transpiring moisture and keeping the air full of water vapor, and that air goes up the mountain slopes, it condenses out and it snows. And now that air is dry and it's no longer snowing, so the snow fields are no longer being replenished because of man's activities. Man can have an effect on climate, but it's usually a micro effect, as it is in the case of Kilimanjaro.
And really, there's deforestation that's done that?
It's deforestation. That's or all the evidence. The same thing, same type of thing has happened in the Panama area around the Panama Canal because of the immense deforestation. Now, before you get too excited, in the United States, we have more trees and more forest lands now by about two-thirds than we had in the early part of the 20th century. We have actually grown our forest back. We have more forest now than we did then. Many of the old pastures and so forth and farms that were eked out of the forest have regrown and back into the forest now. So we are not in that situation. We have good forest management practices here in the United States that allows our forests basically to stay in the equilibrium. Yes, you can find exceptions, but at the same time, most of our forests are in very good health. The only forests in our country that are not in good health belong to the U.S. Forest Service because they have a no-cut policy.
And, of course, if you go in and you cut the trees down, then, of course, the sun can get in and the trees will grow. You have too many trees and they don't get enough sun to grow.
That's right. That's absolutely right.
And, of course, the CO2, the increasing CO2, has actually benefited the trees. In fact, my understanding is if you look on the rings of the trees, you'll see in the recent years a massive increase of evidence of growth of those trees, which is one reason we have so much more wood here, is because of the rising CO2. It's the food that, of course, that nourishes our plants and nourishes our trees. But
yes.
Why is it they never mention that? Why doesn't Al Gore tell us that?
Good question. We'll pick it up when we come back.
All right, fine. Well, our guest today is Dr. Michael Kaufman. We're talking about the fraud of global warming. Now, why are they not telling us the truth? Because it's an attack on Western civilization. Al Gore is part of an elite group working with the sustainable Charles over there, over in England, and of course what they really want to do is impoverish our people and destroy our economy. Michael, go right ahead.
Well, one of the things, as far as carbon dioxide being a benefit is concerned, it is a huge benefit. NASA has even got photographs that show how much the northern hemisphere, if that's where most of the continents are, how much the northern hemisphere has become greener over the last 50 years. From the early satellites in the 1960s, those photos to what we see today, we have actually gotten greener because there's a real fertilizer effect of carbon dioxide. As you mentioned just before that little break, is that carbon dioxide is a fertilizer for trees. It's the basic foodstuff for trees. While we breathe oxygen, trees breathe CO2, or carbon dioxide, and emit oxygen that we then breathe. And without carbon dioxide, you cannot have trees, period. It just, or no vegetation. It requires carbon dioxide, and the more carbon dioxide it is, the better they like it. In fact, if we doubled the current level of carbon dioxide in our atmosphere, our plant growth would increase anywhere from, I'm going to use a bottom rung figure of 10% up to well over 50%, the average being somewhere between 25 and 50%. That includes our crops. Our crops will actually increase in productivity. In fact, they have seen this happen, where we have more carbon dioxide, the yields will increase by anywhere from 25 to 50%. You know, in a world in which we have increasing population, that's extremely important. That's free food. In other words, we wouldn't have that if we didn't have the increase in carbon dioxide. Not only that, but what we're seeing here is the fact that carbon dioxide in very dry areas, droughty areas, the Sahara Desert and so forth, will actually increase productivity of crops even under those severe conditions. In fact, it almost doubles the amount of crops that the amount of production that these crops will produce in those adverse conditions. So carbon dioxide is a real, real benefit because it not only increases overall food production or vegetation growth, but it also increases in extremely marginal situations where people really have to eke out a living. It will increase it even more dramatically there. So it is really amazing. In fact, I was just reading an article a couple of days ago, Stan, that was showing that the Sahara Desert was again shrinking because the grasslands and so forth on the south edge were starting to re-encroach again on the Sahara Desert. And they're basically saying this is a combination of two things. One is the amount of increased carbon dioxide, and two is that because of this, the precipitation patterns have been changing, and it's getting a little bit more rain. So you have a double whammy there of the fact that we're having more and more encroachment of vegetation and so forth on the Sahara Desert, which is good news for the people that live there because they've gone through about a 50-year period in which the Sahara Desert has been growing up until about 10 years ago. So the carbon dioxide effects can be very, very beneficial. And we, you know, as never mentioned by Al Gore, as never mentioned by any of the global warming, man-caused global warming proponents, because it really tears down their argument.
All right, fine. Well, of course, one of the major arguments is that there is a general consensus. In fact, it's final now. There is a consensus among scientists that global warming is real and that in all probability that mankind is responsible for the global warming. And the only people, of course, who doubt that, who question that, are something called the deniers. They've created a new word. It's only the deniers, of course, that challenge that. And we'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I was just commenting that Al Gore has said that there is a consensus. It's definite now. There's a consensus among scientists throughout the world based upon the second report of the IPCC, the Intergovernmental Planet on Climate Control, that global warming, probably created by mankind, is a reality. Nobody, no responsible scientist denies that at all. How do you deal with that sort of a statement by Al Gore?
It's absolutely false. I can't overstate that particular point. You'll see it produced, repeated on every evening news program, on every newspaper and so forth, that there's total unanimous consensus, except for these few outlier scientists that just do not believe that it's happening.
Overpaid by the big oil companies, of course.
Oh, yes, right. When, in fact, most of the scientists, in fact, the majority of the scientists that believe that there is man-caused global warming are actually being supported by government grants to look into this issue. And if they do not come up with a result that shows as man is responsible for global warming, they don't get the next grant. Period. That's it. That's gone. They're out. They're out on their ear. Their families are out on their ear. They may be working at a university, but that's called what's called soft money. They have to continuously bring in government grants in order to maintain their position. And what they find is if they don't come up with the right answers, they don't get rehired. It's simple as that. And there is a tremendous motivation, far greater motivation, on the part of these government-paid scientists to come up with scare stories than it is for an industrial scientist to come up and say that it's not happening. The relationship here is just beyond belief. It's the total corruption of science. I just am furious about what the government has done to pervert and to corrupt science on this particular issue.
Well, I think that what's happened is that science is becoming discredited because these men are not doing what's right. They're doing what's expedient. And I would simply point out that Dr. Art Robinson, the Oregon Institute on Medical Researches, has actually sent questionnaires out, and 17,000 scientists, that's 17,000 scientists, have written back and said there is no evidence that man's activity has contributed to global warming. There is no evidence that man's activity has significantly contributed to global warming, which means that, of course, all these other scientists are either wrong or maybe, of course, they're being frightened and terrorized into coming up with a lie. Could you explain to our listeners what this idea of a greenhouse effect is? We hear about greenhouse gases, but most people don't understand the greenhouse effect. Could you explain that to them?
Well, the greenhouse effect is very simple, and the reason why it's called greenhouse is if you've ever gone into a greenhouse during a spring or summer day, you'll find that it's much hotter in the greenhouse than it is outside. And the reason why is when the sun actually shines on the earth, it has very short-wave energy, very high energy, short-wave, and it penetrates everything but clouds and actually strikes the earth's surface. When it strikes the earth's surface, it's absorbed in the form of heat, and then it's re-radiated back out into the atmosphere and into outer space in the form of long-wave energy. It's very weak energy. It's more of a heat energy than anything else, and I think that's the easiest way to understand it. Now, if there happens to be gases in the atmosphere that either reflect that energy or actually absorb it and then readmit it, which is most of the time, that's a greenhouse gas. What it does is it traps that heat, does not allow it to escape the earth, and sends it back down to the earth's surface, and you get a kind of a ping-pong effect going on, which causes a tremendous amount of warming. If we did not have greenhouse gases, we would have extremely cold temperatures. It would be 30 to 40 degrees colder than it is on the average global temperature than it is today. And as a result, greenhouse gases are critical. But again, as we mentioned at the beginning of the program, the most important greenhouse gas by far is water vapor and clouds. And it doesn't take much to realize this. You've seen it all the time. You've been aware of it, but you probably have not thought about it in these terms. If you look at the Mojave Desert, let's say that's Phoenix or Blythe or something in California, where you have very, very dry air, it can get up easily to 110 degrees during the day, but then it'll drop back down to 70 degrees at night. A 40 to 50 degree temperature change between day and night. It's called diurnal temperature changes. When that happens, you need a coat at night and, of course, briefs during the day. If you go to Atlanta, Georgia, where it's very humid, you have a lot of water vapor, what you will find is that it rarely will get up to 110, but let's say it does. It will probably not cool off any more than 85 or 90 degrees during the night, or about a 20 or 25 degree temperature change. That is the effect of water vapor in the atmosphere. It is a tremendous, huge effect on the Earth, and it's the primary source of why we have livable conditions as we find it, is because of the water vapor in the atmosphere, not because of carbon dioxide.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course we're talking about this fraud of global warming. And it really is a fraud. But as Hermann Goebbels, the director of propaganda for the Nazi Party, said, it doesn't matter how ridiculous something is. If you say it often enough and convincingly enough, and everybody says it, why, people will believe. And that tragically is what's happening here. They are teaching this in our schools as if it were a scientific fact, and it is not a scientific fact. The media keeps claiming that there's a general consensus of scientists that agree with this concept, and that is not true. And, of course, what you need to do, of course, is study this issue. And, of course, I'm looking forward to Dr. Michael Kaufman's DVD, which he's putting together. We need a various means of convincing people the truth about this, one of the greatest frauds of all time. But this, of course, is a very important fraud, because if they can convince us there's global warming and getting us to go along with the Kyoto Protocol and all the draconian measures that would be involved in doing away with, of course, the use of our cars and electricity and our manufacturing and our production, why, they'll transform our society. And that's exactly what people like Al Gore want, a wretching transformation of society. Michael, you pick up the story.
It is. In fact, back in 1992, when he published his book, Earth in the Balance, that was one of his famous statements, is that we must undergo a wrenching transformation of society in order to save planet Earth. This is not new to him. He's been on the green bandwagon for a while. He was quiet there for quite a few years, but now he's coming roaring back. And the only reason, he's either, you've got to look at it from this perspective. There is no scientific evidence to back him up. Really, almost none. You know, there is circumstantial evidence. There are correlations. Let me just take one correlation, for instance. I'm kind of deviating here, but I hope I'll get back. I mean, here's the inconvenient truth. I'm looking at it right now as I'm watching the monitor of my computer. He goes through this 650,000-year period of evidence showing all the carbon dioxide levels going back 650,000 years from the ice core data that was taken in Antarctica. And then he plots temperature, the Earth's temperature, which he can do. I don't know if it's accurate in the sense of the absolute amounts, but it's probably pretty accurate in the sense of the relative amounts from one period to another period. And it shows a high correlation. And I want you to hear what I'm about to say. They have them on two different graphs. One's above the other. The carbon dioxide graph is above the temperature graph.
You're going to have to hold that thought and duplicate that against. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly Michael Kaufman was talking about Al Gore's convenient truth. The new motion picture, I'm surprised it hasn't got a Nobel Peace Prize, but at least it's got an Oscar so far, and it's really part all of the propaganda campaign. They really want you to believe that we have global warming secondary to man's activities. No question there's global warming, but does man's activities actually produce this? And does the increase of CO2 as a byproduct of the use of fossil fuels produce this? So Michael Kaufman, Dr. Kaufman, is talking about the graphs there. Would you like to pick up the story of those graphs again?
Sure. You find over a 650,000-year basis that he shows very high correlation between the amount of relative amount of CO2 and the relative temperature of the planet Earth. It almost looks like a one-to-one correlation. And it is. It's a very high correlation. Don't get me wrong. But you have to look at correlations with a jaundiced eye, because I can say with 100%, there's 100% correlation that every single human being, that's you and I and everyone else that's listening, is going to die because we breathe air. Now think about just what I just said. Now, is breathing air going to kill you? No. In fact, you're going to die much sooner if you don't breathe air than if you do. But there is 100% correlation that if you breathe air, you're going to die. No one has ever beat those odds. No one in all of history. So you have to be careful of correlations. They're not necessarily cause and effect. And what we're seeing in the greenhouse gases, if you actually overlay those and actually combine those two graphs together, what you will find is that the temperature curve precedes the carbon dioxide curve. In other words, the temperature starts to go up, and lo and behold, the carbon dioxide curve starts to go up. Or the temperature starts to go down, and lo and behold, the carbon dioxide curve starts to go down. It's separated by anywhere from a 400 to an 800-year gap. So what's happening, if there is any cause and effect relationship at all, is that the warming does something that stimulates the release or the production of more carbon dioxide. And there is a very strong correlation, a very strong ratio, that the Earth water can actually hold more carbon dioxide when it's cold than when it's warm. As it warms up, it releases carbon dioxide. Well, guess what? That's exactly what these curves show, is that following warming and enough period of time for the oceans to begin to start warming up, then carbon dioxide levels start going up. And then it starts to cool down, and lo and behold, 600 or 800 years later, the carbon dioxide levels start going down. Just exactly what you would expect with a normal relationship if temperature is the driving factor, not carbon dioxide.
And, of course, the question is the melting of the polar ice caps. They keep talking about the melting of the polar ice caps. Is that really true? Are the ice caps really melting on Mars?
Yes. In fact, it's very interesting that not only Mars, but some of the moons around Jupiter and so forth, they're actually, which then goes to show very clearly, I think, that if you have a situation where all the planets in a solar system are warming, it can't be because of increased carbon dioxide on planet Earth. It's got to be because of something else. And lo and behold, there's a lot of things that make sense if that were to happen. We knew 100 years ago, for instance, that the space rays, the cosmic rays, radiation coming in from space, actually caused more clouds to form on planet Earth. Well, if you have more clouds forming on planet Earth, and clouds have what is called a high albedo, an albedo is the amount of reflectiveness of one a substance. A black ball, for instance, has zero albedo. A cloud that is white has very high albedo. So when the sun comes in, the solar radiation comes in, and you have a high albedo on those clouds, of course, it reflects away. It never reaches planet Earth. And as a consequence, the Earth's surface is going to cool off. And so when there's a high degree of cosmic radiation coming into the Earth causing more cloud formation, what you find, of course, is that you will find more clouds, therefore cooler temperatures on planet Earth itself. Now, one of the things that they noticed about 50 years ago is that when the sun had a lot of solar activity, a lot of solar flares, that type of thing, it emitted a tremendous amount of radiation, not enough to warm the planet per se in itself, but it emitted a lot of solar radiation. And that radiation then actually causes, it pushes back the cosmic radiation to the outer atmosphere, the outer reaches of the solar system. And so what you find is that more of the solar radiation actually gets to the various planets. Since there is less cloud formation on planet Earth, more of the direct solar radiation actually gets to the planet's surface and causes more warming. And therefore, there is a high correlation, it's not direct, between solar flares and sunspots and the Earth's temperature. And they've noticed that back since the 1700s in Galileo. They have actually plotted the Earth's temperature over the number of sunspots, and there is a high degree of correlation. Why? Because the more sunspots there are, the more solar eruptions there are, the more solar radiation occurs that pushes back the cosmic radiation, and the fewer clouds that are formed because there's less cosmic radiation that causes the hygroscopic nuclei for the clouds. It's amazing. And it's not a one-to-one because there are other things going on, too. But that is what seems to be, and there's a lot of controversy going on in the scientific community about this very issue right now. There seems to be a cause and effect relationship between the amount of solar radiation and the amount of cosmic radiation creating the clouds and therefore warming the Earth.
Well, it's my understanding that the actual measurements in the stratosphere, as written about by Dr. Fred Singer, the actual measurements on a wide scale across the Earth, and certainly the measurements down deep in the ocean really don't show any evidence of global warming. So how could it be that Al Gore would say that the measurements show definitely, no question at all, that there is a global warming? Where are they getting their measurements to justify their position?
It's a good question. We do have global warming. Fred Singer, I know Fred Singer personally, and he and I have talked on frequent occasions, and there is global warming. But the fact we have to recognize is that it's not man-caused, and it's much less than what they're actually saying it is.
But isn't most of that occurred before 1940, 1945?
Most of it occurred before 1945. Now, some of it has occurred since 1975 and 2000. It really hasn't warmed up much during the 21st century. So far, we've stayed pretty stable.
Now, what are we really talking about? Are we talking about 10 degrees? Are we talking about 15 degrees?
Oh, no, we're talking about... Since the 1700s, we've warmed up a little over a degree. In the last 30 years, we might have warmed up another 3/10 of a degree or something like that.
We're talking about the 3/10 of a degree that Al Gore is so worried about.
Now, right.
What are the implications as far as our society? Because this is really all about getting the Kyoto Protocol signed. What impact would the Kyoto Protocol have on life here in the United States?
That is one of the most sickening treaties I have ever seen. You know, we've talked about the fact that I was able to stop the ratification of the Convention on Biological Diversity back in 1994. That was a bad treaty. The Kyoto Protocol is really, really bad. Why? Because it would not solve one iota any global warming problems that we may have. It's not designed to address global warming. It's designed for an income redistribution plan from the first world nations to the third world nations. It has no effect whatsoever. In fact, they said, even the United Nations will admit, if they get 0.01 degree temperature correction or reduction by the Kyoto Protocol, if every nation was, I shouldn't say every nation, but the nations that are ascribed to it, if they were to fully ascribe to it, reduce their greenhouse gas emissions by 30% to 40%, they might get 0.01 degree temperature drop in the Earth. And really what it is just a gigantic income redistribution, because we have to buy pollution credits from the third world nation. This is just nothing but a farce. In order to be able to continue our manufacturing, to drive a car, to use our TVs and that sort of thing, we would have to buy, in other words, give money to the third world nations to buy their pollution credits, because they're not bound by the Kyoto Protocol. China is not bound by the Kyoto Protocol. China is going to exceed the United States probably next year in its greenhouse gas emissions, and yet it's not bound by the Kyoto Protocol at all.
Wait a minute. If we're really worried about, you know, pollution and CO2 emissions and global warming, why wouldn't we include China in that, which by next year will be the largest polluter in the world? I mean, it would seem that, you know, if we're really concerned about this, why China would be included at the top of the list.
That's exactly right. And what you will find is that they're slanting this so that it brings down the income level of the first world nations, especially that of the United States, and attempts to bring up the income level of the third world nations, including that of China. That's what it's designed to do. It's an economic treaty. It's not an environmental treaty whatsoever. Now, their economic premise is also wrong, but we're not going to get into that tonight because it will not help China at all.
Well, now, my understanding is that, initially we would have to reduce our greenhouse emissions to about where they were in 1990. It would be about 18 years ago. And then by the year 2050, we would have to actually reduce our greenhouse emissions by 80%. And since, if we don't have an alternative form of transportation, we'd have to get out of our cars and have to drive the price of gasoline at $15 a gallon, so you couldn't afford it. And then, of course, they're going to continue to block production of electricity. They won't allow us to, so far at least, to go nuclear, because they say we don't know what to do with the spent nuclear fuel. But, of course, they know what to do with it. They would reprocess it, not put it in Yucca Mountain. That's absurd. They wasted billions of dollars to make a big hole in Yucca Mountain. When, of course, what Japan and France and other nations do is simply to reprocess their nuclear fuel. So it's all a gigantic scam. But certainly we're going to have to certainly give up a lot of our manufacturing, and certainly we'll have to have electric rates so high that people won't be able to afford air conditioning and the other luxuries we have today. Would that be a fair estimate?
That's a very fair estimate. That's exactly what I see them doing. And what they want to do is to already, let me give you the background, already the average gross domestic product for an average American citizen is $47,000. Because of all the regulatory apparatus, because there's such socialist states in Europe, that's down to $32,000. So it's about a $15,000 difference between the average American gross domestic product. That's not your salary, but that's the estimate of the average wealth between Europe and the United States. Because we have such things as private property rights, they don't. They only have marginal private property rights. Our industrial capability is much better than theirs, et cetera, and so on, because we don't have as many regulations. Now, we're rushing to catch up with them, but we, at this point, we don't. Then you get into the third world nations, and it's anywhere from $1,000 a year to per person to $10,000 a person. In other words, it's just lousy, absolutely terrible, because they do not have the capitalistic structure necessary to create wealth, primarily private property rights, but it goes way beyond that as well, as you know, Stan. What we're seeing here is the effort to bring us back down to parity with Europe, and to bring both Europe and the United States and Australia and Canada and so forth down probably another 20% or so in our standard of living, so that they can have what they want. They want to lock up the land. They want to take our private property rights away. They want to take everything away. Why? Because all these things give us independence, and they can't stand to have us have individuals independent. They want control, period.
I mean, is that what Al Gore wants? Is that what the people he represents want? They want to control us? Is this really a control mechanism?
It is a control mechanism. Now, whether Al Gore is smart enough to realize that, that's up for grabs. But at the same time, either he has terrible advisors that are lying to him, because he's so dumb, or he knows exactly what's going on, and I would bet the farm that he knows exactly what's going on.
But wasn't he part of that group that actually drew up the plan for the Second Earth Summit in Rio back in 1992 that led to the Global Biodiversity Assessment Report?
Oh, yes. In fact, he was up to his eyeballs in that particular meeting in Rio de Janeiro back in 1992 called the Earth Summit. And he put a lot of political pressure on it, finally forced George Bush, the first George Bush, to come down, at least make an appearance at that particular meeting to give it political credibility. And, of course, that out of that came the Convention on Biological Diversity, the Convention on Climate Change that we're talking about here tonight, that's led to the Kyoto Protocol and ad nauseum. All of these things, of course, have their origin at the international level. Everything that we deal with today has its origin. These plans are at the international level. That then it'll come down through the government agencies, through the non-governmental organizations and so forth that affect you and I on the ground.
And, of course, there's really an attack on the economic stability of our nation. Now, this is really exactly what they intend to do. Now, Al Gore is part of an elite group with a great deal of money. He has a 10,000-square-foot house that uses more energy in 1 month than most people do in a year and a half or 2 years. He's got his, his best SUVs and all of this sort of thing. But, he just wants us to lower our living standards. He's not going to lower his living standards. And he claims it's all right because he bought some carbon credits. So he's reduced his carbon footprint, and that somehow makes it all right for him to live so much better than he wants the rest of us to live.
Absolutely, and that's the hypocrisy. And I was very pleased with Senator Inhofe in March 21st when they had the hearings on global warming and Al Gore was testifying. Inhofe really called him on the carpet on that, would not let him wiggle out of it until he finally, the time was over and he had to leave, of course. But this is literally atrocious. He speaks out of both sides of his mouth. On one side, he says that we have to do all of this, but he's not going to change it all. And then he excuses it because he buys these very, very, very expensive carbon credits that nobody else can afford, and then says he's carbon neutral. Well, I'm sorry, I just don't buy that.
Well, I think it's the height of hypocrisy, but there really are people who look at the world differently. I think that this is the important thing for people to realize. There are people who really believe that an elite should control things, and the only way that that we're going to have sustainability is to lower the living standards of the common people. And this is really covered in the Global Biodiversity Assessment Report, published by Cambridge University Press. You can get it, you know, you can order it, but it's expensive. We've summarized that in our Sustainable Development Syllabus. And Michael, let's get your website out right now.
It's discerningtoday.org, D-I-S-C-E-R-N-I-N-G, today.org, discerningtoday.org. And on it, I have a five-minute clip on, actually, it's a trailer on the global warming video that I'm creating. I think you can look at that and see just how ludicrous, even in 5 minutes, how ludicrous this whole global man-caused global warming scare story really is.
And how soon can we get the DVD?
I don't know. I'm looking for helping. The financial support I thought I was going to get has fallen through, so I'm doing it as I can, but I hope I get it done by the end of the month.
Okay, well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is certainly Dr. Michael Kaufman. And you pick up. You've got about 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
I think one of the things that we often talk about in closing on our program, Stan, is the fact that we are looking at an outward evidence of a spiritual battle that's going on behind the scenes. And I'm really, really concerned about what I'm seeing now on this global warming issue. It's the state of hysteria now in the media. I've never seen anything like it. Nothing ever even come close to something like this as far as a contrived evidence. Now, you can say 9/11 was contrived and that kept us spellbound for months. Yes, that's true. However, 9/11 did happen. Global warming is happening, is not man-caused. I have never seen a situation where so many people have been fooled and duped for so long. And there's only one source of this, and that, of course, is in the spiritual dimension that we need to be aware of, because we are dealing now with a process in which we're seeing the outward manifestations of a spiritual battle that's going on underneath the scenes that we cannot see. And we need to recognize that. We need to be aware of what's going on. We need to learn what's going on and be educated so we can share this information with others. But we also need to be on our knees praying that God would do what he needs to do in this situation. I don't know what he needs to do. I would like to say that he needs to wipe this off the face of the earth. That's one of the reasons I'm doing this DVD. I think he's really called me to do it, to enlighten people as to the deception, the radical deception that's going on. But at the same time, we may be closing in the last days, and this is to be expected. Nonetheless, we need to pray that the truth would get out to those who he wants it to get out to.
Well, I agree with you, and I certainly appreciate the fact that you're taking the time and the effort and all the heartbreak that goes into putting this DVD together. And as soon as the DVD is available, give us a call. We'd be glad to carry it. Now, what's the name of the other DVD? We do carry one of your others at the present
time.
It's
World Events and Prophecy. Several months ago, I did one that shows four major prophecies out of the Old and New Testament that I think are being fulfilled today in our on our precursor, I think, to Christ's return.
And, of course, that's World Events and Prophecy. It's available to Radio Liberty at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Michael, thank you so very much for being with us. It's always a pleasure, and we'll look forward to talking to you later about on this same subject. I'm looking forward to seeing your DVD.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. God bless.
Bye.
All right, fine. Well, we'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest has been Dr. Michael Kaufman. And, of course, he does have a DVD we carry called World Events and Prophecy. Very well done. Has some excellent film footage there. Lou Dobbs talking about what's going on and beginning to pull this in, as well as Michael's very excellent presentation on World Events and Prophecy. Now, we do have a 4-tape set on global warming. We actually have something called the Sustainable Development Syllabus that summarizes the report that came out of the Second Earth Summit, the Global Biodiversity Assessment Report. And there in this syllabus, we have the Earth Charter. We have my Population Control Agenda monograph. We have the report from the World Bank of Water Policy. We have, and of course, we have the material from Michael Kaufman that he has actually written on this subject. We go into certainly the Georgia Guidestones. The syllabus goes with the talk we give on sustainable development, the road to world government, which is really what this is about. So I suggest, if you'd like, the video, the road to world government, sustainable development, the road to world government, and then, of course, our four-tape set on a sustainable development. You need to see how this fits together. Our four-tape set on global warming is important. And understand that behind all of this are powerful spiritual forces. Their goal is the destruction of Western civilization. And people say, why would anybody want to destroy Western civilization? Why, there are people who look at the world differently. And our enemy is not over in Iraq or Afghanistan. Our enemy is right here in the United States. At 58 East 68th Street in New York City, where the Council on Foreign Relations meets, and then, of course, with the people like David Rockefeller, who admits in his memoirs that he is part of a cabal that is conspiring to bring about a new international economic order. That's on page 405 of David Rockefeller's memoirs, where he talks about, you know, where his daughter is such a good friend of Fidel Castro. Why would David Rockefeller's daughter be such a good friend of Fidel Castro? Because everything is a scam, ladies and gentlemen. Everything is a scam. Now, if you'd like to get David Rockefeller's memoirs, if you'd like to get our material on global warming, our four tapes, and it says we also have a very good DVD. It's actually one that was done by Michael Shaw. I should say a video. And it's available from Michael, or we have that as well. It goes into sustainable development. My talk on sustainable development of the road to world order. Then, of course, you really need to get my talk on planned population reduction. It's about almost 2.5 hours, and there really is a master plan to kill off most of the people on the planet. If you want to get the documents on that, that's in the hidden agenda syllabus, and there's, of course, a video that goes along with that. It goes into water fluoridation, but you'll see there the pages from Bertrand Russell's book, where he talks about the necessity of a black plague every generation, so it can kill off a lot of people. Black plagues are wonderful to kill off lots of people, and of course, they're working full-time to create new diseases at Port Dietrich, Maryland. Why would anybody want to do that? Because there are too many people in the world, ladies and gentlemen. They're using up all the natural resources that should be reserved for the elite. And there really is an elitist mentality out there. We hope that you'll challenge what we say. We hope you'll want to get my talk on the Brotherhood of Darkness. My talk on Forbidden Secret. The new DVDs on the secret mysteries of America's beginnings. And, of course, now Riddles in Stone, both very professionally done by our good friend Chris Pinto. And although I do have a small part in them, I'm certainly not have very little to do, but it's interesting to see these stories there. So give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. Get the truth. Help us disseminate it while we still can. And again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. Until tomorrow, may the Lord be with you.